Okay, so for the record, if you could please tell me your full name and your position, and tell me a little bit about your activist background.
Okay.
It sounds like you have a pretty big one.
Right. Oh, so my name is Sharon Madriaga Quezada. I'm from the Philippines. I'm an international student. So first year PhD in sociology. And yeah, I've been interested in social movements since I was in college just a long time ago.
Okay.
So I was involved in like student movement back in the Philippines. We were mostly, it was a left organization, and I was a journalism undergrad, so I was mostly involved in like writing, propaganda.
We never would have been allowed to do activism in my journalism
really?
Program. You're supposed to be objective.
I know, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know, for some reason, I've been like writing propaganda for, it's called Union of Journalists in the Philippines. So we wanted to provide an alternative venue for like news on protests, because they usually are framed, the news are usually framed differently in mainstream media, right? You know how it works, like sound bites, everything. They edit like the activists, they portray them in a negative light. So I've been interested in how media frames social movements, protests, in mainstream media, and that's like my academic involvement. But
it's fascinating,
right?
Wow.
Even like back in college, I've been reading news, and even the use of language, like sometimes they call it riot, sometimes they call it protest, sometimes they just call it like lobbying. Even the way they portrayed the organization, they would call them like an NGO, if it's a professional organization mostly, and then they would just call it like a people's organization, grassroots organization. So they all have this formula of, that's my academic interest when I was an undergrad. My activist involvement, after I graduated, this is so weird, I applied to an advertising company.
Really?
PR work? I don't know. I just, I don't know. I was just there's
Did you enjoy it?
No, I lasted for 2 weeks. Okay, so I'm enough of this, I just hated it. Every day I had to drag myself, and it's only for 2 weeks, and I was so unhappy. And I was one time, I am over this corporate bullshit. I'm seriously? So I just resigned. And then they talked to me, why did you resign? We had to forego the other applicants because we wanted the whole guilt trip and all that. And then I said, it's just not my thing, And then, they were still convincing me. And then this girl actually, she had the nerve to tell me, you shouldn't have applied here anyway, because you're not the person for this kind of organizational culture anyway. She told me that, and then she told me why did you apply here in the first place? And I just I went really nasty on her. I just told her because I wanted to unionize the workers. I kid you not, I told her that.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What did she say?
And she just looked at me, and I just I was packing my stuff and I was just gonna go. I don't really care about you guys. I don't care if I get blacklisted into advertising whatever business. So I went back to I worked for as a researcher back in my university. It's the University of the Philippines. And then I got it's called the Rural Studies Center. And then I got involved again in activism, but mostly on anti-WTO stuff and on the World Bank meetings. So it's the broader global justice movement.
Okay.
So the anti-WTO, I was most active when, because I was also a researcher doing social movements, so I had to be careful with being super involved.
Yeah.
That would compromise my academic objectivity or whatever you call it. So but I was heavily involved in the WTO conference in Hong Kong.
Okay.
And then the mobilization prior to the Cancun ministerial meeting. I don't know how familiar you are, but there was huge
WTO.
So after Seattle they did Doha, right? And after Doha they did Cancun, after Cancun Hong Kong.
Okay.
So I was involved in the two. And then World Bank meetings, just protests in the capital. but I was also I went to some activities, like, you know, in Thailand, or, you know, like governors meeting, stuff like that.
You traveled a lot.
Well, yeah, because of my involvement. And then I was also involved in the international campaign to ban landmines.
Okay.
So, because they were doing, like, they were expanding their networks, and they needed, like, youth campaigners.
Mm-hmm.
And I was volunteering to the, they had the Philippine campaign, but the mm-hmm. Philippine campaign is involved in, like, the campaign also in Brunei,
yeah.
Malaysia, mm-hmm. Indonesia. Because they didn't have them, though. So,
yeah.
So basically, the ICBL wanted youth campaigners for Southeast Asia, and I was mm-hmm. like, I was doing volunteer work,
mm-hmm.
but then I got involved as youth campaigner, so I got to travel, like, you know, the minefields in Cambodia, and then
it's dangerous.
Yeah, but just look at, you know, we were just like looking. It was more of like, I like a lot of youth campaigners I met, like, all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
We had a series of, like, just getting to know the issue and the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, there was that. And then we went to the UN summit in Bangkok, and then another UN summit in Nairobi in Kenya. I spent 3 weeks in Kenya.
Wow.
So, it was part of the UN leadership, mm-hmm. UN and ICBL leadership training
mm-hmm.
for youth activists. But it was, like, very UN lobbying.
Yeah.
Because it was, ICBL became mm-hmm. from a social movement to more of NGO bureaucrat.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I got out of it. So all of the activists were, like, till I decided to go back to that and, like, you know, my academic work, till mm-hmm. I went back to school
for my MA. Irvine,
yeah,
right?
I got a Fulbright grant, so I just
wow. What was your Fulbright grant to study?
Just an MA degree in social sciences in Irvine.
So okay.
Yeah. So yeah, that was it. That was my first involvement.
And so, what do you want to do with the social, the sociology degree that you're getting here from the University of Pittsburgh? Do you want to go back into that?
My PhD sociology. In my sociology, well, I want to teach definitely, but I don't want to be like the ivory tower academic
mm-hmm.
who just wants to be, you know, publishing. I know, like, they say you're just saying that now, you're so idealistic, they keep saying that, but eventually the system will get you and you'll be that person. And, like, I don't think I want to be that person. See, it's just so, like, not me. So I respect people who would want to do that, but it's just not me.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to teach, yeah. And in social movement studies, I want to focus on immigrant activism.
Okay.
So I'm focusing, like, right now, my interest is on 2006 immigration reform rallies, but I want to expand it more just to look at, like, immigrant activism in various dimensions,
mm-hmm.
not just, like, immigrants campaigning for immigrants' rights in the U.S., but also, like, transnational activism, because I know they are very much involved in their countries of origin,
yeah.
and how the difference in terms of activism among, like, first generation immigrants and mm-hmm. the succeeding, like, second generation, third generation. So.
Okay.
So yeah.
Interesting. So you have all of this interest in immigrant stuff here in America, and you're interested in media coverage of
protests yeah.
at home and
right.
social movements. You were involved in the WTO. How did you get involved in G20 here in Pittsburgh?
Oh, in G20. Because, like, you know how, like, mobilization and G20 are, like,
mm-hmm.
it's all part of, like, the supposedly global justice movement.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been following, like, you know, this, like, various summits. Because in social movements, there has been a tendency to look at international protest events
mm-hmm.
right now. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, the whole globalization social movements.
Yeah.
And it's also the same with domestic. We look at protest events. Like, mm-hmm. We talked about that in class, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in the G20, before I came here, I didn't even know it was going to be in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But I was following the London summit.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I just saw, like, a news article, like, mm-hmm. I think last July or June, it's going to be in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm like, wow, it's going to be in Pittsburgh. So,
mm-hmm.
and so I emailed the Pittsburgh G20 Resistance Project, just asking for information, and they just said, oh, like, you know, you can go to this activities, it's on the web. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I was like, yeah, I want to be involved. But I think it was more of like an academic interest rather than an activist interest. Because I was telling Marie how, like, maybe I don't feel a sense of like ownership because mm-hmm. I wasn't involved in the whole process. Yeah. So it was more of like, okay, I support the cause. I'm gonna go to like all the protests, the meetings. Mm-hmm. But I think the academic, my academic whatever interest is on top rather yeah. than my, like, you know, activist identifying with the movement. Mm-hmm. So it was more that. And I've never been to a protest here in the United States since I moved here because when yeah. I was Fulbright. We were specifically told not to be involved in any form of anti-government rally.
Because it's funded through the government.
Yeah, because it's U.S. Department of State. And they mm-hmm. said, like, if like, the sheriff gets you or whatever. Because when I was in East Irvine, mm-hmm. I was very active in the Free Palestine mm-hmm. campaign in January. Mm-hmm. But it was more low-key.
Yeah.
So I was just like, when I moved here, I was like, oh my God, I have to be in the G20 protest. Mm-hmm. I have to see it from my eyes.
Just to experience it.
So I had a lot of field notes mm-hmm. on that, just because, like, you know, like more of like I told you, the academic in me.
Yeah. So did you do the surveying that Rachel was
right,
doing?
Right. I did all that. Okay. So, yeah.
So you definitely were there on an academic footing.
Mm-hmm. Academic footing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell me all the events that you attended then, just to give me a basis.
Right. Okay. The first event I attended was the anarchist picnic in Friendship.
Was that on Thursday?
It was on a Tuesday.
I have not heard about this event. What is the
event? I have pictures. I can send them to you, and I have field notes.
I would love to see them, yeah.
So it was more of like, you know, because I think I heard of it from a friend of mine, Phoebe. Mm-hmm. She's a Malaysian, and she's like, you know, she's very active. She's an activist, too. So mm-hmm. so she invited me. So I think Tuesday or Monday, like, activists like from like other places started mm-hmm. coming in to Pittsburgh, so and a lot of the anarchist groups too. So they wanted that picnic mm-hmm. to sort of like welcome pretty much everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a Friendship Park. So yeah, that's the objective. So I went there
mm-hmm.
and yeah, it's really interesting. It's with mostly anarchist groups.
Yeah, how many people were there? Would you say?
I would say in my field notes I put like 50.
Okay, so it wasn't huge.
Right, it wasn't huge. You bring your own food, you know, like, and there wasn't a program of some sort. It was
yeah.
just, like, you know, like, Marie and, like, the others are just speaking, like, oh, yeah, like, welcome to na-na-na, and, like, we'd like to create this, like, whatever, solidarity or whatever. So they just have that spiel, and, like, you know, okay, we ate and just yeah. interacted with people. But there was media there.
Okay.
Oh my God.
I didn't see that coverage.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Okay. I'm going to send you the pictures and like my field notes.
I really want to hear about this. Yeah.
Okay. So this is really the interesting part.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So KDKA,
mm-hmm.
like this reporter approached us,
mm-hmm.
me and my friend Phoebe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he found it very interesting because it was very like white and we were the only Asians there. So he immediately approached us.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even, like, he was, like, looking at us from the time we got there.
Really?
Yeah, and so he approached us, and then he was like, yeah, and he was like, this is so weird. The first thing he asked, like, hey, where are you from?
Oh my gosh. Wow, you're kidding. And what did you tell him?
Yeah, well, I told him, like, we're from the University of Pittsburgh. And, like, you know, like, oh, so what are you doing here? And it's just, yeah, because, like, you know, yeah, we're here because we're interested in blah, 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 and we're studying protests and social movements. And then
mm-hmm.
he said, so you didn't come here for the cause? And I'm like, yeah. And then, like, no, we also identify with the cause, but we're mm-hmm. here more for our own. And I was just talking to him, and Phoebe was just... She doesn't want to talk to media or whatever. But then she started talking to, and, like, you know, started asking questions. Oh, that's when he figured out that we're not from here. When Phoebe started talking, because Phoebe still has the like heavy accent.
Yeah.
Then he said, oh, so you're not from the U.S. or whatever. And Phoebe said, yeah, I'm from Malaysia. And like she's from the Philippines. Phoebe said, like, oh, that's really interesting. And then he got more interested. And then he went back to the camera person, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back and then he asked us if we'd like to have an interview with him.
Man.
Yeah.
That's almost frightening.
Yeah, like, why? We were like, what's it about? And it's like, we'd like to show, like, there are a lot of activists coming in, even from overseas. And I told him, but, you know, we didn't come from overseas for the G20.
Mm-hmm.
We're already here because we're students. I think he wanted to portray that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I hate, like, media, how they distort. Sorry.
You hate journalism training.
I know.
You hate yourself here.
No, I know. Like, just some journalists, you know, how they distort, yeah. Like, but we didn't agree because Phoebe and I, well, at first we were thinking, like, oh, maybe we can give an interview. But then he said we were going to identify you and, like, say you're an activist and a student from the Philippines or from Malaysia. Like, and then we... Phoebe and I kind of talked about it, and we were like, oh, we don't want to compromise our visa or our immigration status, because we're a non-resident alien, and he might edit us out, and it would look like we're, like, doing something bad here, like, so, yeah, we just didn't want to go. So when we didn't...
It's scary that you have to think about that.
Right, so when he didn't agree, he then approached, like, our friend. Amy, so she's very good, but she did. He was just like, he just wanted to interview like someone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think he was able to interview somebody else. Mm-hmm. We were also approached by he had like, I didn't really see like a van, but he had like a BBC.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
And I didn't know it was big. There was just media.
Why do you think that they were trying to skew it toward, oh my God, all these international people are coming in to Pittsburgh to protest the G20 when that really didn't seem to be the case?
Right. I don't know. I have no idea. Because I know, like, the G20 summits have been, like I told you, an international protest event. And there are a lot of international activists.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess here it wasn't that big in terms of international activism, maybe because Pittsburgh is also, I don't know, not as cosmopolitan as where, like, you know, it was, like, in London, and I think before that, it was, I don't know, somewhere in Germany, or, like, in, I don't know, like, Rome, or whatever, so. So, I think they wanted to portray it that way.
And so, you're talking a lot about the difference in the G20 protests here. You attended the anarchist picnic.
Oh, yeah, and I also attended the anarchist unpermitted rally.
Okay, on Thursday.
And the Friday people's march.
Okay. Now, those three events, talk to me a little bit about your perspective of how different they were from what you've attended elsewhere.
Right.
Because I get the impression you were sort of, on these particular rallies.
Yeah, well, I found the anarchist movement, the anarchist protests, very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's like, of course, it's like illegal, and most of the rallies I've been to were like sanctioned by the state. You know, like it's like there's the politics of accommodating them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you give them space, But the anarchists, it's kind of different. I think the big difference, I think, is that first, like, there were more international activists in the ones I've attended, like the governor's meeting of the World Bank or IMF in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there were a lot of Asian groups, but there were a lot of like international activists from Europe, from the US.
Mm-hmm.
And then the WTO summit in Hong Kong.
Okay.
Yeah, there was a lot. But then again, I was also thinking, and I actually raised this in the forum, like we had with Rachel, those were really, really big, like, you know, institutions, WTO and World Bank.
Yeah,
there's like a concrete target there, whereas G20 is a very informal organization. And then also WTO, and I'm comparing it mostly to WTO because that's like my main area of study anyway. The WTO then, both for Hong Kong, I didn't go to Cancun, but Hong Kong and Cancun, there was like massive mobilization because they were already targeting it. They were like, activists were already wanted to take it down. Because after Seattle, it failed in Seattle. In Doha, it failed too. There was hardly a consensus. In Cancun, it was like also like hardly a consensus. There was a breakdown of talks.
Yeah.
So in Hong Kong, they were like, no, we're going to bring it down. It's going to die in Hong Kong. So you have that momentum.
Yeah.
Build up of momentum because, like, you know, like, it just gives you an adrenaline if you're thinking we can bring this institution down. So you have there were a lot of protesters from overseas, from Asia, from Europe, from whatever.
But the previous rallies?
Right. Okay. But in the G20, I guess, well, it was, you said June, July, when it was notified
in
Pittsburgh. You have that very, very small time frame to organize. And I was talking to Marie, how Marie was also saying how you have to draw on mostly local organizing. And a lot of the local organizations or local movements are not really that acquainted with the G20.
Yeah.
And they had like difficulties tying their concerns to the G20. Unlike, and I'm comparing it to the WTO, you already have a community of activists or organizations dealing just with the WTO. So
why do people not deal just with G20? Because it's like this ephemeral kind of scary organization sometimes for people.
Right. I don't know. I don't have no answer for that. I don't really know. But I know, like, that's why the anarchist movement, I think, became very dominant. Because it has a very, like, concrete, like, anti-capitalist stance.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. I have no explanation why there was no... I'm just thinking the time frame was just too small. Too short. Because I remember during the WTO in Hong Kong and Cancun, we had 1.5 years preparing for that. Because they notify it, like, you know, if the ministerial was in 2003, they already say, oh, the next meeting will be in Hong Kong. So you have that kind of time frame to prepare. And then you had the World Social Forum process, Asia Social Forum process. Those, like, encounters, because in social movements literature, they call it social movement encounters. Like, it just provides you an informal space to talk about concrete strategies. Those spaces provided, like, like strategy building. So by the time the summit came, you know what to do, you know. I attribute it mostly to the short time frame in preparation for the G20 for activists. But then I think it was also successful in a way.
How so?
Well, with that short time frame and with most organizations not really involved directly with the so-called global justice movement, unlike in Seattle.
That was an interesting time, I gotta say.
Right. See, in Seattle, there were so many overseas international organizations there. I knew there were a lot of Filipino organizations who mobilized in Seattle.
And some
of them from the Philippines, some of them the Filipino-American community. But, yeah, it's like, even like immigrant groups in Seattle, they mobilized. You know, they tied their issues to... Yeah, so, but I knew Seattle, they had that huge preparation, too, time. Because I think the 1998, the last ministerial was in 1998 in Geneva. So they had, and then they announced that it's going to be in Seattle, and they had 1 year to prepare for that. So, that's what it was successful because still, even if the organizations which join are mostly local, local movements who are very, how do you call that, particular in their concerns, like very, like, okay, very city Pittsburgh concern. They were still able to mobilize for a very international project, international issue, like TG20. Because I remember in Seattle, like, there were a lot of, like, anti-sweatshop organizations, and which were not just local but kind of national. The fair trade organizations were very active then.
It was huge. We got a lot of people coming up from the anarchist organizations around the United States. So why do you think that you guys managed to draw together all of those local organizations to create the G20 protest on Friday, which was huge, and then we'll come back to Thursday, which you thought was interesting.
Why were they able to draw on it?
Yeah, why did these organizations care? What made them care and come together to form coalitions, as somebody else was talking about?
Well, from my observation, like, you see how if you looked at the protest and you looked at, like, okay, the concerns or whatever, the organizations that were there, some were involved in, like, animal rights, gay rights, Tibet, what else?
Tibet was huge.
Climate change. So I think they were what they... anti-war committee, whatever. So I think these kinds of events just provide an opportunity for people to air their grievance, or, you know, they're so disenfranchised. It doesn't really matter if the issue is like G20. We just wanted a venue to, you know, to 'cause you know how they say, like, the global economy is expanding, but global democracy is not really expanding, especially like in terms of representation. You don't really have a global governance or global government to speak of. So, and a lot of people are marginalized even in their own state. So protest events are opportunity to just go out in the street and just carry whatever concern you have. Just a venue to be heard. So I guess for most people it's like that. And no matter how... Do you want to look at that first?
Yeah, I do. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Just make sure it's not my babysitter.
Like, no matter how thin or how shallow the connection they make with their concern to G20, like, how are you gonna make a connection between Tibet and G20 or expansion of global capitalism? Or, like, what else? Like, Palestine and, you know, it's just like that. No matter, like, for most people, the connection is just so, like what I said, it's very thin, it's very weak, and you have, like, so many, like, you have a rainbow, you have a panoply of concerns, and the target is not really visible, or you cannot exactly pin it down. How are you going to do that? So ultimately, it's just going back to the whole nature of protest and activism and social movements, just, it's about, it's okay, an opportunity to just air your grievance, to just go out there. And a lot of people did not belong to any organization, and they just made their, because we were also talking to some of the people, and they didn't belong to any organization, and they were, like, holding, like, you know, and they just said, like, oh yeah, because, you know, and they were it was about minority rights or something, like this woman. So doesn't really matter what they're concerned, if it's related to the G20.
So you could kind of see, I'm hearing from your perspective that even though the organizations themselves weren't connected, them coming together to protest G20 shows just how global local problems
Right, exactly. Even if, you know, you don't, it's not really clear cut, it's not a direct connection, it's not, like, you know, you can't grasp it immediately, mm-hmm. like what the connection is.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's more like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you found the Thursday rally really interesting.
Right. It was my first, like, exposure to anarchist protests.
Oh, okay. So take me to the ground from your perspective. What was it like?
So we went there mostly to do the surveys, mm-hmm. but I wasn't really interested in doing the survey. Like, seriously, I didn't care. So I was sitting here just taking photos and, like, mm-hmm. yeah, and just observing. See, because I never really know. I don't know exactly what their ideology. I know it's like, you know, the absence of government or the state, mm-hmm. But I can't understand it or appreciate it still. But, you know, like, I'm open to it. Okay. Like, you know, so I don't really care much, right? It's just if you're a student of social movement, you have mm-hmm. to be open to, like, everything. And mm-hmm. I just had this, like, idea that, oh my God, it's gonna turn violent and because of, like, the how they are portrayed, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Even if I know, like, Marie's in an anarchist movement, and mm-hmm. they just create this, like, idea that they're just, anarchism is about violence and chaos.
Yeah.
And yeah, and all that, mm-hmm. and yeah. So I went there, and okay. They were friendly, but some of them are kind of hostile, especially when I was doing the survey.
What were they hostile about?
They didn't want to do it was a survey. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to do the survey. But I wouldn't trust someone who's doing the survey too. Like, seriously, frankly. Mm-hmm. That's why I thought it was a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't trust him. Like, you know, why are you here? The questions. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, and then, okay, so... Yeah, my impression of it was that they are really, really organized, mm-hmm. and they know what they're talking about. Because I was talking to some of them, mm-hmm. and I thought that it was just a learning experience with me, and, like, it was, like, to disabuse any of my, like, you know, whatever, like, mm-hmm. Stereotype or, like, prejudice of them. Mm-hmm. They really knew what they're talking about, and... I thought they were like some middle class, like, suburban or whatever, frat boys, like, trying to, I don't know, resolve their masculine ambiguities, whatever, you know, stuff like that, you know, like, oh, like, it's a way for us to do violence. Mm-hmm. But no, like, I was talking to them, and they were talking to me about, while we were marching, I was, like, mm-hmm. talking to one of them, and he was telling me about how he read, like, Kropotkin or Bakunin, or, like, you know, oh, yeah, I think they know what they're talking about, and most of them are in college, mm-hmm. So yeah, and this is the most interesting part for me. Mm-hmm. I saw the Philippine flag. There were like five, like, Filipino American mm-hmm. Anarchists from Harrisburg who traveled here, and so, but they were cop. So I saw my flag and I just approached them. Mm-hmm. Like, I already know they're, like, Filipino Americans, mm-hmm. and then their faces are covered, but I think three of them are, like, biracial.
Yeah.
Because, so, like their eyes are, like, light. So I was just asking them, because how did you get involved? And they were saying how in Harrisburg, there's really, if you want to be politically active, there's really no ethnic organization that you can go to. Mm-hmm. But there's, like, a very strong anarchist movement. So
in Harrisburg?
Yeah, they were just, yeah.
Random.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know Harrisburg, so I don't really know. I know it's, is it the capital?
It is the capital.
Yeah, yeah. So they said they got involved. And they're really young. I think they're in college, but I think they're, like, freshmen or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and so, again, like, I had this, like, impression of the anarchist movement, and I think it's true. Like, Marie told me that, mm-hmm. and even, like, Rachel or Suzanne, like, the social movement in the department told me that. I had the impression that it's a very, very white movement. Mm-hmm. And, like, ethnics are not really, you know, like, they're not really drawn to that movement.
Yeah.
I just have that impression because it's so white. Like, you know, actually, we were talking about it at Rachel's place.
Mm-hmm.
And why are some ethnics not drawn to the movement?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, and Susanna's, another faculty in the department, husband, he's black, and he said, like, there's just, you know, it's not just about the cause.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of, like, the lifestyle. Because social movements also, like, kind of create a lifestyle or, like, their own culture and identity, right?
Yeah.
That kind of, like, turns off, like, you know,
yeah,
other ethnics.
Definitely.
Music they listen to,
mm-hmm,
like, you know, how they, even they do their hair or, like, they dress.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not, like, how ethnics are.
Yeah.
Said that. And I'm like, wow, I find that very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So when I found those Filipinos who were there, I'm like, my God, like, seriously, it's like hockey. My friend who's a Filipino, he is such a huge hockey fan.
Mm-hmm.
And they make fun of him for that. Like, dude, that's such a white sport.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, so, like, you know, like, there's some, yeah, it's so funny.
Huh? I love that you just compared the anarchists to hockey.
No, seriously. It's like the Filipinos, like, yeah, like, joining, it's mm-hmm, like that, like, it's so alien.
Yeah.
It's so alien. But then again, maybe their location, Harrisburg,
mm-hmm,
that's not really an immigrant receiving city.
Yeah.
There's no huge population of immigrants, so I guess, like, yeah, if they want to be politically active, and the anarchist movement is the way to go.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, and I guess maybe, because they're, most of them are biracials,
mm-hmm,
you know how, like that ambiguous identity of biracials anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I don't know. So I found that very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just, like, talking to them, too, throughout the rally. And, yeah, and then another I found interesting is how the police, the policing of protests,
mm-hmm,
they were really good, the police. They knew how to handle. They really learned from what happened in Seattle, what happened in Miami during the Future Year of the America Summit.
How did they compare to other police you've dealt with?
Well, first of all, the rallies I attended,
mm-hmm,
in Hong Kong and, like, in Singapore and, like, in the Philippines, it was permitted.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so you have the politics of accommodation. Like, here's
yeah,
your space, just don't go, like,
mm-hmm,
but this one is unpermitted, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we went, like, we were going around Lawrenceville and
mm-hmm,
where else, and they were just, okay, the police would come again, this is an illegal rally, you
mm-hmm,
have to disperse now, na-na-na, and then, okay, so we would go to another place,
mm-hmm,
and it's a good strategy, because when they block it, mm-hmm, when they block, like, the march, because it creates confusion with the protesters, so
yeah,
they split.
Mm-hmm.
Some would go left, some would go right, some
mm-hmm,
would go, like, wherever, right? So
mm-hmm,
they split. Until it's already small, it just keeps getting small.
Yeah.
The group, so it's a very, very good strategy, the way they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were tear gassed at the street. It's a small street.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why the police used it.
Yeah.
I was in the middle part of, like, the march,
mm-hmm,
so I didn't really know.
How big was it at that point in time?
It was already small.
Mm-hmm.
It was so small. And they weren't, like, throwing rocks or, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't think, like, the protesters were antagonizing them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I didn't know why the police used that. So the police strategy was very effective,
mm-hmm,
in a way that, like I said, keep on splitting the group until it becomes a manageable size,
mm-hmm,
and they can just, like, you know,
make your guess.
Yeah, tear gas you.
What does it feel like to be tear gassed?
Oh my God. Oh my God. Like, I was, there was this guy, he just, like, handed me, like, the mask,
mm-hmm,
but it was, like, a freaking surgical mask.
Mm. That does nothing for gases, just saying.
I know. So, and my friend Phoebe, she just covered her face, and I think she didn't inhale much.
Mm-hmm.
I inhaled so much, and I was just coughing, and like my eyes were like, it hurt so much. Mm-hmm. But then they had like street medics, mm-hmm. protesters, so they poured like water in my eyes, and they were really helpful.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, but I couldn't breathe, and I was like, and after that, I was still like, whatever, let's still go, let's see what happens, because I wanted to see how it is. So, mm-hmm. and then they, you know, like they. The anarchists like kind of like rolled this dumpster to the police.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh, what's interesting is like the reaction of bystanders and neighbors in Lawrenceville area. There was this one guy when he saw the anarchist group. Mm-hmm. He just took his, like, he had a baseball bat, and he said, "Get out of my fucking neighborhood."
Oh yeah. My gosh.
I was so scared of that guy.
Wow.
Yeah. He's like, "Get out of my fucking neighborhood, you fuckers." He just kept on saying the fucker. He was just saying how, like, you know, like, you cannot, like, do that here, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there was this also, like, other lady, an old lady, mm-hmm. she told the protesters what they were like you know, taking, like, oh, I think they were pushing the dumpster or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
She just said to the kids, like, you know, you can destroy whatever property, government property you want, but don't you touch my car. So she was just there. She was guarding.
That is so cute.
Yeah, and she's like an old lady, and she had that like southern accent.
Mm-hmm.
So she was just guarding her car. Like, seriously, she was like, you know, like beside the car.
That's hilarious.
And the protesters, they said, they told her, "Yes, ma'am."
Oh, that's so cute.
It was so funny. It wasn't my film now. It was just funny. Oh, so we had those like funny moments.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also just one lady, the moment she saw, it was in Lawrenceville still, the moment she saw that the anarchist groups were like approaching, mm-hmm. and I think she was about to take out her garbage,
mm-hmm.
she just ran back and like locked the door and like shut down her windows.
Wow.
Or whatever. So yeah, so there were like mixed.
Did anybody support you in the neighborhood? Did you get any, woohoo?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I don't think we got that.
Wow, okay.
Mostly they were scared, indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, except that guy, that angry guy.
Do you think it was appropriate to march through the neighborhood like that? In some ways?
There was no way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Because they block, like, some of the areas, and I think for the anarchists, like, thought it would be good to cut through, like, you know, the small streets.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they went. Because mm-hmm. they wouldn't, they were just in Liberty Avenue the whole time. But
yeah.
but when the police started, like, you know, saying that this is an illegal march, mm-hmm. and then they started, like, using tear gas, that's when, like, mm-hmm. the protesters tried to go into the inner, like, smaller neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you would call it appropriate that way. It's just probably like survival or just strategic.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah. It wasn't something they really planned on.
Right.
So how did the unpermitted rally compare to what you knew? And
the unpermitted?
Yeah. What was the feeling there? Do you think it was effective as compared to some of the other things you've been at? And you may define effective.
The unpermitted rally.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's effective in a way of showing how there's still dissent,
mm-hmm.
and the anarchist movement is still strong, or mm-hmm. something. Strong in a way of, like, you know, numbers and show force that they're visible.
Because. Mm-hmm.
If the movement is invisible, then you kind of question whether they're still alive or they're dead, right? Like,
yeah,
the, like what we studied in the women's movement.
Mm-hmm.
So it's effective that way. And I remember, like, there was this news coverage, and like there was this one, like, I think a city official or something,
mm-hmm.
and how he said, like, it was a Thursday protest. It said we learned about the unpermitted rally in Lawrenceville, the anarchist group, but yeah, they didn't really cause anything to the summit. He said that. Mm-hmm. He said it still proceeded the way we planned it, and we were able to contain it. He said.
Yeah.
So for him, it's not effective that way in terms of disrupting the summit. But then again, I always believe that in protests, in like summits, it's very rare that you can actually bring it down or shut it down, like in Seattle.
They really did.
Yeah, they really did. Mm-hmm. It was mainly because they didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't see it coming at all. They were so surprised with Seattle. And here, because they already learned from experience, they pretty much prepared for it. So it wasn't, But then again, like I said, it's just not that fair to just judge the movement by just by that main goal.
Yeah.
It was effective in a sense that, like what I said, it was able to show visibility and strength that it's still there. I know it wouldn't matter to some, but it matters in terms of the survival of the movement, I guess, because you have an opportunity to just...
Yeah. So were there other ways to sustain and your visibility that would actually be more effective at disrupting T20? What else would be more effective?
Not really sure. I'm not really sure how it would be more effective. Because you know how they said, like, the state already knows how to accommodate dissent, even if it's not going to give in to that dissent. So they just, they accommodate it, but it's not going to be affected by it.
Okay.
So the state also changes, like its tactics, in terms of even policing.
Yeah.
You know, by allowing them to, giving them space to participate. They said it defeats the purpose of protests. Social movements and even activists say that. Why should we ask permission to protest? Why should we be? It's like an oxymoron. Like you are giving the state more power to regulate what kind of activities you engage in terms of, you know, activities that show dissent.
Yeah.
So I think there's so much power with the state, and even how it addresses the idea, it addresses dissent or protest. That it's just hard to I don't know if it has something to do with the nature of democracy right now. But yeah, so like I said, it's not going to be affect protests or even social movement activity if you just look at it in terms of the changes in policy, state policy or government. It's not going to be that effective because the state already knows how to handle it, how to give it a semblance of accommodating protests or dissent without giving into what the people want.
Yeah,
definitely.
In fact, they can just harness it and ignore it.
Right, yeah. Like, okay, we'll give you, you can protest. Basically, we're just ignoring you. We're just showing that, okay, this is democracy.
Yeah.
But I think that's how it is right now.
How do we change that? I mean, so you've been saying the rallies here were effective.
In other dimensions, right?
Yeah.
Just within the movement, among activists. Yeah.
But if the movement overall isn't effective, why bother? Right? If it doesn't achieve its primary goals.
I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. That's a valid question. Why even bother? And I think that's how a lot of the youth or people, the sentiment of the people, we're not not going to change anything. We're just going to, it's the status quo. Everything is not going to change. So why do you even do that? Why do you even protest? And you hear that all the time. So there's really no way of answering them.
So why do you bother?
Me? Oh, okay. So why do I bother?
Because obviously you have a reason.
Right. Well, I think... I guess I'm still, like, idealistic. Mm-hmm. That, you know, like... change may not be revolutionary, mm-hmm. but, you know, you have that incremental change. And I think by showing that you still protest, there's still that, you know, you still go out, it just shows that, you know, the people are watching their governments, or, like, the power is still with the people.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, how, like, people protests have overthrown governments,
mm-hmm.
like all over the world.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're still like trying to show that,
mm-hmm.
that we're still like, you know, we're still watching you and can bring you down. Maybe not now, but soon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, maybe
you better listen.
Right. I think I still believe in that, and protest
mm-hmm.
is symbolic in that way. I may not be able to achieve my goal of maybe, like, whatever, bringing down the WTO,
mm-hmm.
but at least it has that, it kind of, like, creates that maybe fear, too, with the government,
mm-hmm.
or the politicians, or whatever, state officials.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, switching gears really quickly, I mentioned a little bit before we started this interview, a little bit about your unique perspective as both an academic and an activist.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult was it to balance those two without, as you said, impinging on your credibility? Because you said that's a major problem.
Right. Yeah, actually, I've been confronted with that. Like, I did a research on the anti-WTO movement in the Philippines, and I presented it in various conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, people have asked me that, like, are you saying that as an activist? Or are you saying that as an academic?
Mm-hmm.
And I always maintain, like, you know, if I'm here, if I'm saying this, like, my activist hat is, like, off or whatever. I tend to avoid, like, just uncritical, like, you know, like, praising the movement
mm-hmm.
or whatever. I think it goes back to, like, you know, the training in social science or... You exercise, like, personal reflexivity, right?
Yeah.
So even, like, epistemological reflexivity, and I guess right now, at this point in my life, I think I'm more of, like, an academic
mm-hmm.
rather than activist. Because, like, there's three of us in the department, like, Marie, Phoebe, and me.
Yeah.
We all have, like, strong activist background.
Mm-hmm.
And they, like, Marie and Phoebe said...
Apparently, I need to interview them, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially, Phoebe would give you really good perspective, too.
Okay.
They were saying how, oh, Sharon, we will make you, you know, go back to your activist route, like, making mm-hmm. activists, like, higher than your academic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but... But yeah, like, at this point, I think I'm more of, because I already have that track, like, you know, academic track.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I've been so disillusioned with social movements, seriously.
Why?
With a lot of social movements that I was involved into.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the internal bickering,
mm-hmm.
the whole, like, splintering because of personal differences, even, like, the left in the Philippines, how, there was so disillusionment being involved, like, how, like, freaking, like, ICBL turned from a very grassroots-oriented, vibrant social movement to a freaking NGO bureaucrat.
Yeah.
Like, see, like, I was just, there were so many. So basically what I'm trying to say is, like, while social movements, okay, they're, like, you know, democracy, they foster democracy and all, they work for social change. But really, they're also, like, you have people there.
Yeah.
You have, you know, social interaction, human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And some conflicts are just, to me, that kind of, like, affects the movement. They're just stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have, like, how it becomes moderate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They become moderate, and then they become hostage to their funding organizations.
Mm-hmm.
So you have moderation, bureaucratization. I've experienced it with most of the social movements I was involved in. Mm-hmm. So I have also had that disillusionment.
Yeah.
With some of them. So I'm very critical.
Mm-hmm.
I am not the activist who is like, yay, like, you know, everything is good. We like this, even like the Philippine left or left politics in general.
Yeah.
I would not support a lot of their causes.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah, I don't think I'm that, so...
Do you think... I think a lot of people saw that sort of thing maybe coming out of the G20 stuff here, because it wasn't the Seattle WTO mm-hmm. or the Hong Kong or Cancun mm-hmm. WTO that we were all expecting.
Right.
So do you think people have a reason to be disillusioned by these G20 protests from what you saw?
I don't know. Maybe for them, they really... I don't know. They probably are thinking, oh, it wasn't as exciting.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't really enough action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, from their perspective, basing it maybe from Seattle.
I talked to firefighters who said that.
Really? I know. I think maybe the police is also looking into, like, maybe that's probably why they just went on arresting, like, innocent kids. Because
yeah.
They were like, damn, like, we were thinking of, like, having, you know, confront, like, the anarchists or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you just have to understand, like, how, like, the context changed, and the state is really, really smart. It learns from previous mistakes, from previous, like, encounters with social movement activists. It changes its tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Its tactics. Very much.
Yeah.
But see, social movements also change their tactics. Mm-hmm. So it's just, they say in, like, social movements, for example, if you use the political opportunity model,
mm-hmm.
like, there's, like, this dancing, mm-hmm. big dance, so you know which step your partner's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
So you do, you know, sometimes you're in sync, sometimes you're making, like, advanced move,
mm-hmm.
and, like, he doesn't know what you're going to do next or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, okay, so now, like, it changed. Okay, so, like, for example, like, the policing of protests is not going to work. We learned it from Seattle. We learned it from Miami. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
Okay, so the movement will also change its tactics.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember how they said, like, the Facebook and all that. Like, organizing through media.
Twitter and...
Right. It responded to how there's, like, censorship or whatever, or, you know, just, monitoring, like...
Yeah.
That kind of activities. But apparently, the police is also monitoring the internet now. I don't mm-hmm. know.
Well, according to Marie, too, her friends
got screwed
over from that.
Right. So, for example, how... and there were a lot of events prior to G20
mm-hmm.
that really, really scared the shit out of the government or police. Like, you had the Greece riots.
Oh.
Right? Seattle, that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, also, like, in France. And then mm-hmm. London. So they were, actually, like, maximum security. Did you see, like... Their gears, they had like, they look like Robocop or something. Like, they were going to war.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seriously, that they were going to fight, like, in a war.
Yeah, and I got a great picture of, like, 50 of them in full riot gear guarding Dippy the Diplodocus. They're in front of the museum.
Yeah, see, so, they review, like, movement tactics,
mm-hmm.
and they try to do whatever they can to.
So in the dance, was the G20 more in sync, or was it more of an advancement for the state or the protesters?
Yeah, I think it was more of the state.
Mm.
Yeah, it knows, like, every move that the protesters were going to do.
Mm.
They were really smart. They were really smart. Because they said, like, you know, like, some of them were from not from here, right? And they're
mm-hmm.
used to, like, they're used to dealing with protesters.
So. Yeah. It sounds like you really admire what the state did during the G20, even if you're sort of find it abhorrent.
But I admire it in a way that, you know, from academic point of view,
mm-hmm.
like, yeah, they know how to handle protesters in terms of, like, policing protests. Because
mm-hmm.
there's a really good area of study in social movements, just focusing on policing protests.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really good. They were really good.
Hmm.
I do not admire, you know, like them mm-hmm. in a way that, you know, like, oh, they arrested like protesters. Like, that's really admirable. Like, that's really like policy. Like, especially like students, you know. But in terms of learning from previous protests, they were good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because there are various models. If you study literature and policing protests, you have the Miami model. They said they have the Genoa model.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe they have the Pittsburgh model now. I'm not sure. Suzanne and me, we're going to do, like, I think a paper on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to present to the Eastern Sociological Society conference.
No,
but just policing of protests, and I hear you saying how, oh, we should come up with like the Pittsburgh model of protest policing.
I would be curious if you would tell me what you think the Pittsburgh model was.
I don't know. I'm just getting acquainted with like the literature. She's the one who's like who knows it. But I'll let you know.
Hmm.
In Genoa, like the police like shot like a protester accidentally. Yeah, and the Greece model, that one, they said, okay, policing and protest, these are the bad models,
mm-hmm.
these are the good models. I don't know how exactly that literature or that scholarship
mm-hmm.
will affect, like, both protesters and the police.
Yeah.
I think they will learn from both. I think both camps will learn
mm-hmm.
from these, like, models of policing.
Mm-hmm.
So the Greek model was, oh my God, like, it just didn't know how to handle them.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, yeah, it was just an uncontrollable and uncontained protest. So here it was very contained. Because the main goal, I think, of policing of protests,
mm-hmm.
first and foremost, is containing the protests.
Mm-hmm.
Just making it a march is a march. That's mm-hmm. it. You contain it that way.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you think the People's Parade was nicely...
Yeah, they were contained. It was, like, really... Okay, we marched here, and the police were just there, and... You know what's interesting?
Mm-hmm.
I find it, like, you know, like, the mocking
mm-hmm.
and the ridicule...
Of the police?
Yeah. It was so interesting. We don't do that in our countries.
Mm-hmm.
And even the protests I attended,
mm-hmm.
everyone was so serious.
Really?
Yeah. Here you have a lot of like performativity and performativity that's not like all about rage and anger. Because in the protests I've attended in Asia, the performativity is still like an expression of rage, burning flags.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all the anger, you know.
Yeah.
But here it's humorous. And I like the use of humor.
What really struck you? What did you really appreciate?
Oh my God. There's this, the anarchist, like, there was this guy who was dressed like a cow.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just dancing, like, in front of the police. Like, weird, like, dance moves, like, break dancing and really, like, sexy, like, kind of, like, burlesque way of dancing. I have pictures. And then he was dressed as a cow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were all shouting, like, "Officer, arrest this cow," or something like that. You know, like, it was so funny. And, okay, so, and the that was the anarchist protest. And then the People's March, there were these ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And they were ridiculing the police. They were saying, like, because, you know how they were, like, all geared up.
Right? Mm-hmm.
And then they were saying, like, "Oh, come on, I bet you're naked underneath the skirts." Seriously. And like, "Tell me, you're naked, huh?" Like, oh my God, like, I was just laughing. And I think the police is trying to like control his laughter and
mm-hmm.
even like, you know, his fellow officers.
Mm-hmm.
They were all doing that.
Did any of the police officers react?
Oh no, they were like serious. Because I was expecting them to laugh.
Uh-huh.
I took pictures when they were doing that, like some of the ladies. I find that very interesting. Because I told you, the protest I've been, it was all like an expression of rage.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling Rachel,
mm-hmm.
Simon, how it's alienating to most people if it's just about anger.
Yes.
I guess if it's like very festive, very more bystanders would join, I think, personally.
Really?
Yeah, I think. Because, yeah, it's all about... I was telling Rachel, like, yeah, the protest in Asia is all about sadness and anger and burning flags. That's pretty much it. Burning effigies, burning flags.
But would you find that maybe they have more reason to be angry?
I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I think they also have reason to be angry here. Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe it's just, you know, how protests are there.
Yeah. Do you think that one is more effective than the other? I mean, you've been to some pretty effective marches elsewhere.
In terms of that, the use of humor.
Catching attention.
Yeah, I think it's very effective, the humor, in terms of just not alienating the bystanders. Because if it's festive, seriously, you would just join. And, you know, in a protest, you don't really care. Mm-hmm. Like, especially marches, you just want to show force.
Yeah.
So the more people, the better.
Mm-hmm.
You don't care much if you just brought your boyfriend, but your boyfriend doesn't really care, right?
That's yeah, why, exactly.
Like, some people just draw their friends. Mm-hmm. They join the march even if you don't care. Mm-hmm. As a show of force.
Yeah.
So if you have that humorous and they just join you in the protest because of that.
It might not seem dangerous.
Right. But then again, and you draw media attention too, that's what they say. But then again, they said it could work. It's a double-edged sword because you could dilute the message, make it not serious enough for people to consider.
Yeah.
So,
true.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I just find it interesting how they do that.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
So, we're over an hour, so I don't want to take too much of your time. So I'll ask you one more question, which is there anything I've forgotten to ask you, or just like something else that you really think needs to be said about the G20 here in Pittsburgh, even comparing to your own experience?
Let me think about it. I think I made a note on some points that I was going to talk to you about before, but just to reiterate my point, because we had that forum, right, with Rachel and with Suzanne and with the media forum, and how, like, people had been commenting how it was small compared to most international protest events, and in that way, the Pittsburgh organizers were a failure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's not fair. Like I said, very short time.
Mm-hmm.
If you compare to Seattle, to Miami, to like pretty much everyone, they had like a minimum 1 year.
Yeah.
And also, Pittsburgh is a very small city. You don't have that much international organizations. Again, like Seattle, London.
So true.
Right. Mm-hmm. In Seattle, you have like international, whatever, like trade unions, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's very local. It's very, the concerns, I guess, are very localized.
Yeah.
So, and then again, too, so it was very short time, and then Pittsburgh as a city and the nature of the organizations here, very localized concerns, and then also like the policing of protests. I think those three, that kind of like make G20 summit in Pittsburgh kind of like tame if you compare it to the other ones.
Yeah.
But you have to consider those factors, I think. And I think for me, it was still like huge, and it made a mark, and it was effective in terms of just showing everyone that dissent is still alive.
Yeah, I think from what I just heard, it might be a good idea for world leaders to think about holding their rallies in small cities from now on.
Yeah, seriously. That's what they were saying. You know how, like, for example, like, after Seattle, they held it in Doha, Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
Are you serious? Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, first of all, like, nobody even knows where that is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small city, it's a small country in the Middle East.
Sorry, yeah.
If it's in freaking Dubai, then I guess, yeah. And some people were not able to get visas.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's it. So they really wanted to, it would be effective to hold it in small cities. They said that it's actually hold it in a small city
mm-hmm.
or a small state, or hold it in a police, heavily policed state. Like, you know, like...
like Pittsburgh during G20.
Yeah. Actually, Singapore was really bad. And China, mm-hmm. there were a lot of arrests. In Singapore, when the day of, a few days before this, the governor's meeting of the IMF or World Bank,
mm-hmm.
they kept track of people coming in groups.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. It was such a police. Singapore is a very, very small state, a city uh-huh. state. Yes, it's an undemocratic, the most undemocratic state in Southeast Asia.
Randomly, have you ever been arrested?
No, I haven't been arrested.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lots of protests, never been arrested.
Right. Because, you know, like, I don't know, I maybe look innocent. I remember, and I'm small, and I look innocent. I remember when I was a student,
mm-hmm.
and like my friends and my boyfriend would tell me like, "Hey, put this stuff like you know like bats or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or whatever paraphernalia you have when it becomes violent. Put it in your bag. Like why? Why my bag? Why always my bag?" And mm-hmm. then they would say, "Cause you look so innocent."
God.
Nobody would arrest you.
But you were the weapon carrier.
Yeah, I was the weapon.
They just missed you.
I was the weapon carrier. So yeah, right. But yeah, no. Yeah, in Asia, I guess in Singapore, when I went there in Singapore, I was there alone. And we were already warned.
Mm-hmm.
Like they said, oh, and don't travel in groups.
Yeah.
They're going to question you. Mm-hmm. What are you doing here? Because like we can go to Singapore without any visa, so even in Hong Kong.
Wow.
Again.
So which was your favorite?
My favorite protest so far? I don't know, but I really like the protest here.
Really?
It was exciting. I told you the energy of the protest. But something, there's the newness of it that mm-hmm. makes it exciting.
That's awesome and amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's just... I haven't been to an anarchist protest ever in my entire life. That was the first time.
Wow.
But the others, I'm just so used to it already. Like, you know, I was just so used to it. I was mostly with organizations I knew, you know, like, I was expecting they were going to do that. I told you, like, they were going to burn flags. They're going to burn, like, effigy of, like, Bush or whatever. I already expected that. So it wasn't anything new to me, but everything here was new. So there's that element, I guess. So I don't know. Maybe like if I join a protest in a really, really big city, it would be a lot different too. I don't know. Maybe like, yeah, like in LA or whatever. I haven't been to a protest in LA.
Yeah. No, they have money.
Like immigrants' rights or whatever.
No, I suppose that's true.
Yeah.
I think of those really in Denver and New Mexico and Arizona because that's where I was based for all of that stuff.
Right. Oh. Where were you during the Seattle summit?
I was in Seattle, but like about an hour outside of Seattle.
Right.
Yeah, so.
My friend lives in Tacoma.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, my sister lives there still. My parents live about halfway in between Seattle and Tacoma.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I supposedly have an aunt in Seattle, but I've never met her, so I don't really.
You have somebody to stay with.
Yeah.
I'm going to turn this up.
Okay,
well,
so.
Thank you.